Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Tori Campbell, F1 presenter, stepping in for Lawrence Barreto this week for our preview of the Canadian Grand Prix. It's a big one, it's a tricky circuit, and could it be one that Ferrari could win at, Tori?
Oh, nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me in.
Thank you for coming.
Glad you noticed that I'm not Lawrence. Couple of differences. So, yeah, maybe this is the one that we're going to see, hopefully, a little bit of close competition. It would be nice to see, wouldn't it?
It would make a change.
Yeah.
Toto Wolff has been pretty open about his concerns personally for his Mercedes team. He said Canada's going to be a challenge. The track characteristics could favour our opponents. It's pretty obvious he's talking about Ferrari. There are many long straights and fewer corners in which to make up lap time, but we're looking forward to the challenge. Those longer straights do play into Ferrari's hands, don't they? It's a power-sensitive circuit. We're hearing that their engine is perhaps more potent than Mercedes. Are they going to be looking to capitalise?
Absolutely. I mean, we knew from the beginning, from the get-go of this season, that Ferrari had a really strong power unit. Unfortunately, other parts of the car have let them down. Now, there's only so much the power unit has to do with how the car performs. And Binotto's already actually been very, very vocal in the fact that, is it enough, even on a track like Canada? But you're right, the Canadian GP is brilliant because it's lots of high speeds, lots of straights, a great track to see overtaking, which is what we want to be seeing. Big braking zones as well. So it's really going to test the driver's skill, not only on that overtaking, but when it comes to braking as well. It's going to put the cars under immense pressure, and this is where we usually see this part of the season an engine upgrade come in. However, Ferrari have already brought their engine in. They brought it in Spain, but their power unit, I should say. However, both Spain and Monaco, those circuits don't really favour or won't really show it to its full potential.
So we could finally see it emerge at this point.
Yeah.
With that in mind, why did they bring it in Spain? Did they jump the gun a bit?
Gosh, I don't know. A few of the manufacturers did bring it in early this season, and whether it's just to so much goes into that car. It's incredible. If you ever go and visit the factories and see just how intense the engineers are working on every part of that car, maybe it was, you know, that was the theory behind bringing those engines in earlier.
Do you think there's an element of second-guessing their opponents? We saw this with Mercedes at the Monaco Grand Prix, where they ended up with effectively the wrong tyres on Hamilton's car for the circumstance, because they thought that their rivals would make a change. They tried to make a change to counter it and actually read the situation wrong. If teams are doing this in terms of tactical decisions mid-race, they're possibly doing it behind the scenes in the factories before they even get out there on the track. Is there a case for them just focusing on their own game, their own car?
No, they can't. They have to see what the opponent's doing. It's part of any sport, I guess, really. You have to see what tactics another team is going to do, especially every track brings its own differences, whether they think there's going to be a safety car, what the weather might be like, you know, how the car is going to react to that particular track. And absolutely, they need to kind of suss out what the other team's tactics are going to be. And, you know, what's really interesting as well is during that race, it's not only what's going on in the garage, know exactly what's going on in that car, it's back in the factories as well. I mean, it's insane when you look into how many stats and figures. So they need to know really not only exactly what's going on in their car, but yeah, I do think they need to second guess what's going on in other teams. It's all part of the, you know, tactics of it.
Fascinating stuff. Of course, Mercedes, in terms of their tactics, have decided, as you say, to bring in the engine upgrade at this point. It will be interesting to see how potent that is in terms of their own power unit, whereas actually if we perhaps see them surging ahead on the straights as well. I think a very good point that you raised a moment ago is that the cars are only relevant to a certain degree. There is, of course, the small matter of the person driving it. And Lewis Hamilton has, of course, a glorious history on this particular circuit. He's a master, really. He won his first ever Grand Prix here all the way back in 2007. He's taken the checkered flag another five times since. Will Ferrari be looking at this scenario and going, well, you know what, our car may be very quick, but we're still dealing with a sensational driver?
Well, you know, Vettel quite likes this track too. He won last year, and that was quite a big turning point for Ferrari in last year's season. So I think Ferrari will be coming into it quite confident, fairly confident. Although it's funny that not only Binotto but Toto Wolff have both been playing it down a little bit, haven't they?
Is this mind games, Tori? If you're Toto Wolff, you're looking at not just Hamilton out in front, but of course his race partner then behind him before we even start thinking about Ferrari. Is this a case of trying to put the pressure onto the opponent?
I think so. I think all of it is a big game. And everything that is said in public, at press conferences, it's said for a reason. Put it that way. But that's my own personal...
It's wonderful and interesting to think about how drama plays into this and actually such a big part of all sport, and particularly F1, is also narrative that we get drawn in by stories like Hamilton's dominance and the way in which that they can perhaps even use what they say over the mic during races to influence how we back home view the entire situation.
Yeah, we were just having a quick chat about that before we went on air, because I was saying, you know, in Monaco, when Lewis was very vocal on the radio about what was happening with his car, I absolutely think that a big part of that is letting everybody know who is watching. I mean, they know what's going on at the pit wall. They understand. They know exactly what's going on with that car. But for you and I watching a race, Lewis, no doubt, wants to ensure that everybody realises that he's doing his best.
And that it's not his fault if he loses.
Absolutely. You know, it's human nature, isn't it? It's not my fault. But so I do think that there is that comes into play. And look, it's definitely one of those sports where a big part of it is played off the track as well.
Yeah, I mean, the drama is such a big part of it, and Canada traditionally has been a GP full of it, not least because of the Wall of Champions. Now, its notoriety started in 1999 when Damon Hill, Michael Schumacher and Jacques Villeneuve all crashed into the same wall, which at the time gloriously had the phrase "Bienvenue au Québec," welcome to Quebec, emblazoned on it. That is quite the welcome, isn't it? Here's a large concrete wall to accelerate into at hundreds of miles an hour. It's taken many victims since, the likes of Rosberg, Montoya, Carlos Sainz Jr. Are we going to see more victims coming up?
Yes, no doubt. Vettel's been in there. Jenson Button's been in that wall. It's a it's a ferocious part of the track. It's sort of, it just comes off one of the long straights out of the hairpin, so you've got to think about the cars coming down that straight, and they're hitting sort of or they're having to decelerate from speeds of around 200 miles per hour.
And then try and get back up to that as quickly as possible.
Yes, and then they've got that that really interesting right-left chicane, and then they have to go so close to that wall to make sure they get the best race
terrifying.
Line.
I almost can't watch it. The speeds they're going and how close that right-hand wheel is to the wall. You just think, ooh.
I mean, yeah, really, really, really tight. But, you know, it makes for great viewing, compelling viewing.
Compelling viewing, compelling racing. And it, of course, all depends upon the people behind the wheel. One who, even if his car isn't the most suited to this track, will be in all the headlines is Lewis Hamilton. And coming up, it's time for a chat about just how far he can go.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and F1 presenter Tori Campbell. And I'm delighted to say that we're also joined on the line by Anthony Rowlandson, who currently works in Formula E and is ex-editorial director of Autosport, F1 Racing and Motorsport News, a real authority on the sport. Anthony, good evening. Thank you for joining us. We've seen a fascinating interview with Lewis Hamilton emerge in the last couple of days, interviewed by Letterman on his Netflix show. He's saying he can race for 5 more years. Is that a realistic length of time, and can he keep winning for that long?
I think, actually, on both questions, the answers are a resounding yes. I mean, he's only 34 still, which is sort of, you know, mature for a Formula One driver these days. When you think Max Verstappen came in and started showing his stuff at the age of 17. But, you know, Lewis is still exceptionally fit. He's still obviously very hungry. He's clearly a front-running driver. And when you think someone like Nigel Mansell didn't win his world title until he was 42, I think, Lewis has got years ahead of him, as long as he's got the desire still to keep doing it, I think.
Interestingly, he, in this interview, said that he was 33. And this is now being reported, everyone going, Lewis Hamilton, who's actually 34. I think, Lewis, what is going on? You're a very good driver, but do you not know your own age?
When was his birthday? Because this was...
was it very recent? He's forgotten.
I mean, we've all made that mistake.
Well, you know, racing drivers have been known to lie about their age from time to time. But I think Lewis is eminent enough and also famous enough for that not only to be an issue.
Yeah, we've all got Wikipedia.
He is 34. Yeah,
he is 34. Where, if he does carry on for that long, and if, as you seem confident that he can, if he does keep on winning, where will you see him ranking in that list of all-time greats? Because he's going to have Schumacher's records in his sights.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I think, honestly, Lewis has already established enough to prove that he is one of the two or three very best drivers ever, almost without question. I mean, obviously that's a contentious statement. People have their own opinion. But by any measure, other than the one target of Michael's that he hasn't yet beaten, which is a number of world championships, he stacks up against everyone. He's the all-time pole record sitter. He's been brilliant in different cars for different teams. He's won against the odds. He's won in bad cars. He's won in brilliant cars. He's beaten difficult teammates, and he really has established himself as the man. There was a while after Schumacher when it was difficult to see whose era this would be in Formula One. It looked like being Alonso's for a while, then Vettel came along, won his 4 titles on the trot, which were always slightly asterisk because of the nature of the car that he was driving. But I think really Lewis has emerged as the sort of the great after Schumacher, really, the outright great. People would argue with that, obviously, but I think it's hard to knock Lewis's position.
Anthony, I absolutely agree with that. And I think in, you know, after retirement, when people look back on his career, he will be up there as, if not the greatest, certainly one of them. But, you know, I rate him up there as the greatest. What reception do you get when people speak to you about Lewis? What I often, you know, I was saying earlier, one of the first questions when people find that I work in Formula One, the first thing people say is, oh, what's Lewis Hamilton like? He gets a bad rep, doesn't he?
He does and he doesn't. I think it's changed a bit over the years. I mean, when he was coming through, I remember back in his GP2 days, just before he made it to F1, he was sensational. And people were so excited about this young kid coming through. He's a brilliant driver. You could just see the talent. You could see the speed. And I think there was just sort of awe and excitement about this wonder kid coming through. And then, of course, he so nearly won the title in his first season in Formula One, which he still regrets, incidentally, that didn't happen. But I think over the years, he sort of, there was a bit of a backlash against him, perhaps because of, you know, just some of the clothes he wears, stupid stuff like that, which is just entirely subjective, you know, nothing to do with his driving. But I think now he's sort of gone beyond that, really. And people are almost appreciating him for what he is. And you know, this sort of stuff happens to sportsmen, doesn't it? You know, David Beckham, to take another example, he was, you know, he wasn't always popular, was he?
But, you know, but when then, you say you know, things are subjective, Anthony, some of Beckham's haircuts were objectively awful.
Well, you might say the same about Lewis, but you know, if you need me, who am I to judge? Because I've got strange hair anyway. But I mean, Lewis, I just think it's hard to knock him, honestly. His skill and ability as a racing driver, honestly, is beyond question. You'd have to pick on, I don't know where the weakness is with Lewis. He's not a dirty driver either. You know, there's never the caveat of Senna and Schumacher that actually he was a bit nasty in a racing car. You can't level that one at Lewis either. He wins cleanly. He's not dirty in wheel-to-wheel racing.
Is there an argument for having that element of dirtiness actually just being part of being a really top driver?
He doesn't need it, honestly. He does not need it. He's never needed to take people out. This sounds like I'm sort of paid up Lewis Hamilton fan, and actually I wasn't, but I think he's just, you'd have to be crazy to knock what he can do in a racing car. And, you know, he's sort of, I think he's kind of crushed Vettel a bit. And, you know, Vettel's a four-time world champion and he can't cope against Lewis. You know, Ferrari are crumbling and Vettel was the man for Ferrari. You know, he was the guy that was going to enable them to build a new super team after Michael Schumacher, and they haven't been able to put that together. And I think Lewis will actually completely overshadow Vettel's achievements when we sort of look back with a historical sweep. I think he's just a far better driver.
I think there's also something to be said, you know, people love an underdog, and when he was still coming up the ranks and was really classed as a bit of an underdog, absolutely loved him. And then suddenly when people become very good, and certainly if they become good at multiple things, so he has multiple things going on outside of the sport as well, which, by the way, I think is great for the sport. I think anything that brings more viewers or anything that brings focus back to the sport is brilliant. But unfortunately, I think people sometimes don't like it when somebody is very good at a lot of things.
Yeah, there's always a bit of resentment of that sort of stuff, isn't there? But he's not alone in that. And, you know, one thing I would say for Lewis in his complete defence, which I'd always come back to with people when they start to knock him, is that he is not the silver spoon kid. This was not handed to him. You know, he came from a very, very ordinary family. His parents had their marital difficulties early on. You know, his dad worked three shifts a week. It's famously well told, this story, over and over again. You know, he's got a disabled brother, which he just embraces and brings into his life. You know, he's actually had to learn how to be a very famous person. And I don't think there's a roadmap for what was presented to him. He clearly has been born with an exceptional talent. He's developed that with the help from others as well. But no one gave him a program of, you know, how to be Lewis Hamilton. He's had to kind of work that out as he went along in public. And, you know, if you or I were handed that challenge, it's difficult. You know, he doesn't have a world champion dad to refer to in the way that, say, you know, Nico Rosberg did, for example. There was something he could refer back to. Someone else in his family who kind of knew some of the pressures and knew some of the difficulties that came with fame and success. And I think, incidentally, that's one of the reasons why he was so upset about Niki Lauda, because I think Nicky was actually part of that for Lewis. He was someone that Lewis could look at in his sort of close sphere of influence and think, well, this guy really did go there and do what I did in his era. And he, I think he did become that for Lewis, actually, in a way, a sort of touchstone to something that he's still working out as we go along, you know.
Well, it must be an incredibly hard thing to be Lewis Hamilton or anyone supremely famous, supremely successful in any field. You rightly pick up on the pressures of that there, Anthony. And he's spoken about this in the same interview with Letterman. He said he suffered massive come downs in his career, describes the F1 calendar as a hard, hard year, saying mentally you have these massive highs, wins and success, but then you have these massive lows as well. How hard do you think it must be to deal with?
I think Lewis's way of dealing with it actually is what we see with the sort of, you know, the release in music and fashion and, you know, the time when he took a lot of flack for being a bit of a party boy, none of which ever seemed to affect his driving, incidentally, or very rarely.
If anything, he did better. If anything, he was doing really well when other things were going very well.
Yeah, I think that was Lewis's release, really. And again, I'd go back to my point for what it's worth, it, you know, how do you deal with it? You know, Sebastian Vettel, to take a completely contrasting example, retreats to Switzerland, does no social media, lives a very quiet life with his family. And that's fine, that's his way. But clearly that's not Lewis's way. He's embraced success and the fruits of it and obviously loves fame because he embraces fame. And there's also the faith thing with Lewis, which you can't look past, actually. If you have any serious interview with him, he'll talk quite openly about his faith. Not that he's of a particular religion. He's not an evangelist, as it were. But he does have a very spiritual dimension, which is something that is very important to him, and which he will talk about quite happily.
Fascinating stuff. Anthony, thanks ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you. Anthony Rowlandson there, ex-editorial director of Autosport, F1 Racing and Motorsport News. A fantastic insight there into not just Hamilton's potential as a professional driver, but also as a man. And I'm particularly interested, Tori, by your suggestion that he was arguably at his peak when he was going out most. And I wonder if I put that to my bosses, how that would go.
Yes, give it a go.
Give it a go. I tell you what, if, you know what, if I went out clubbing four times a week, I think that Love Sport's output would really improve. I'm going to try it.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and F1 presenter Tori Campbell. And we were discussing Lewis Hamilton just a moment ago, and perhaps the disagreement, really, that some fans, some journalists seem to have with sportsmen having enterprises and endeavours outside of their sporting careers. But actually, it doesn't seem to have done Hamilton any harm.
I don't think so. No, I was just mentioning that he launched a range with Tommy Hilfiger last year, and everyone was very they didn't think he had his mind on the game, so to speak. And he came back and did one of his best races of the season. So actually, you know, you can't really use that against him. I think if it's working for him, keep doing what you're doing. And I think the Letterman interview beautifully demonstrated his character, what he's been through, and maybe opened people's eyes to the sort of character he really is. I think Letterman really warmed to him. It's looking at the longevity of him in the sport. I think the other side of it that I think was great with Letterman, and another question that always gets thrown at me is how much of it is the car and how much of it is the driver? Could he drive one of the lower...
Could he drive my mum's Polo?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly. And I find that really interesting. And I think it showed on Letterman. You know, he was starting off in cars that his dad was putting together. And
winning things.
And winning. But, you know, maybe that's what we need to shake up the sport a little bit. Maybe
put
we
everyone
need to,
in a similar car.
In your mum's Polo.
You know what? I would watch that. The top speed being 58 would probably take some of the thrill out of it for some people. But...
Do you know what, though? But what do the NFL do? They have a draw, don't they?
So the draft system the lower placing teams get the first pick of the most exciting new stars.
Okay, so you know, how about if they did something completely radical where they removed the drivers completely. So you had your constructors and the drivers were separate and they got picked out at the beginning of a season and that was the car they had to drive.
It would be quite something. You could just put Hamilton in a bumper car.
Yeah.
All right. How clever are you now, Lewis? Let's see you do that hairpin in that.
Well, people who want to shake the sport out. Yeah. That would never work, of course. But it's interesting what would happen.
There is a very interesting conversation about the extent to which it's driving or car, and I think what we saw in Monaco is quite an interesting example of that, because most people are of the opinion that it isn't quite the miracle that Hamilton said it would be while he was under pressure on the microphone to his team, but that actually this was an extraordinary race. It was an extraordinary piece of driving when you're under pressure on a very, very difficult circuit with one of the most aggressive drivers in the sport behind you in the form of Verstappen. It's an incredible thing to be able to stop him from passing you. But given that Monaco is such a hard track on which to overtake, if he didn't have a fast enough car to be in front, would he be able to even do the blocking side of things?
Well, I mean, of course, it's a massive part of it is the car. And Lewis has fallen on his feet with Mercedes. He moved at the right time. I first met Lewis on his very first day of testing in Jerez with Mercedes.
A fresh-faced young lad.
And, he'd done well already with McLaren, but he'd made this shock move to Mercedes, who weren't particularly doing well. That season, the power unit came in, and the firstly, I said to him, are you happy? Yes. Is your dad happy? Nope.
Really?
And he said his dad didn't want him to move there because Mercedes weren't the top team at the time. But they'd obviously shown to Lewis what they had up their sleeve, how much they'd been working on the power unit. And they'll never admit to this. I've tried to get it out of them. But I feel that Mercedes sacrificed previous seasons to make sure that when this change came in, they were top dogs, and it's paid off for them. Mm. And it paid off for Lewis doing that move. I mentioned earlier that it doesn't always pay off. Look at Ricardo, who's a brilliant driver. I love watching him. He's the king of overtaking. He's moved to Renault, and unfortunately, it's not worked for him. And again, they said that they had something spectacular up their sleeve for him. And this time it didn't pay off.
It's not just about the move, but getting it at the right time, yes, as well, and for the right person. I know, as you've just mentioned, you know Lewis Hamilton quite well. It's interesting, when we were speaking to Anthony Rowlandson just a moment ago, he was talking about how some people perhaps don't have the most positive view of Mr. Hamilton, possibly because of haircuts or clothes or various controversies. In your experience, what is Lewis Hamilton the man?
Look, I've always really respected him. He's always been great fun to interview. He's a real giggler. Like, he will really...
Is he?
Yeah. He will, you know, he's... And he's genuinely comes across as a very nice, well-rounded guy. He's always been... He's always asked how my little boy is, for starters.
And he's remembered that you have one.
Yeah. He's... yeah, he will poke fun and we'll have a bit of a joke. He's very easy to chat with. And so, you know, I don't have any issues. And actually, I think it's great for a sportsman to be out there and also show they've got a creative side. Also show that they've got an emotional side. I think it's brilliant. And people are always criticising the sport, saying it needs to have more, it needs to be more popular. Well, when you've got a driver who's bringing popularity to the sport, don't mock it. Don't knock them for it. And one of the best things about sport are those personalities when they start coming through. That's what we like, isn't it?
Yeah, and cynically, those involved at Mercedes, those involved at F1, as you suggest, will probably be none too displeased with the marketability aspect as well.
Yes, because sponsorship is a teeny tiny part
of
the sport.
Just fractional. Just fractional.
Yeah.
Of course, another aspect of the sport is the cars themselves. Easy to forget with all the haircuts and the clothing. Mm-hmm. And coming up, it's time to ask Rob Sinfield of GrandPrixDiary.com about just what we can expect from a Mercedes engine.
This is Love Sport.
Update. Andy Murray there with a classic tidbit of Scottish advice. You're listening to the Motorsport Show right here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and F1 presenter Tori Campbell. I'm delighted to say that we are also joined on the line by Rob Sinfield of GrandPrixDiary.com. Good evening, Rob. Thanks for joining us. We're, of course, looking ahead to the Canadian Grand Prix, and a lot is being said about this Mercedes engine update. What are you expecting from it?
There's also a lot being said, to be honest with you, about how Ferrari are looking good here. So I think the same old games are being played. Mercedes are saying, we're ready, you know, we've got this new upgrade, we're going to go, but we're going to struggle. It's looking good for Ferrari. So I know it's difficult to say. This could be Ferrari's big chance of the year to break this streak. So it's. I think we're going to get a lot closer race than we've had for the last six. So, fingers crossed.
So, Rob, do you think that a lot of that is just talk with, or, you know, when they are saying that they're not as good as, when Toto Wolff, for example, is saying they're not as good as Ferrari? How much of that do you think is actually him just putting it out there? And how much of it do you think is game playing?
I think it's probably 95% Toto Wolff being a little bit embarrassed about how crushingly good they are this year. He's a real motorsport man, and I'm sure he would like to see a bit more competition than he's getting. So this week he has been saying, oh, it's going to be tough.
it's going to be tough to win again.
And, you know, we're not going to do so well. But Ferrari should be good here, but they always seem to find some way to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. So I don't know. We'll have to see. But I think if Ferrari don't do it this weekend, then... they're not going to do it all year.
It's got to happen. It's got to happen in Canada. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be such a runaway, you know, with Mercedes.
Do you think they'll be backing themselves, Rob? Do you think they'll be looking at those longer straights, the manner in which it's quite power sensitive, and thinking, you know what, our engine, our power unit is able to surge ahead here?
I think, I mean, Ferrari are quite good here in any case. They won last year. I think they took pole.
They did,
and they won the race quite easily. Mercedes did actually struggle here. But at the moment, you've got Lewis Hamilton winning on tracks that he's generally not good at. So Monaco, for example, I know he's won it, what now, three times, but it's not a good Hamilton track, but he can still win there. So Ferrari are going to, they've got the straight line speed. There's only, what, three corners and a couple of kinks here, so they're not going to lose time there. So they should, you know, maybe, would it be Leclerc, get that win that he's owed from Bahrain? They should do the business, but this year has just been so disappointing for them. You know, we've got to wait and see if they actually get to the finish first, as they say.
Rob, I'm interested by your suggestion about Toto Wolff, that he, as a fan of the sport, as well as a massively important figure at Mercedes, he might like to see it be a little closer. Do you personally view Mercedes' dominance as something that makes it a little bit less interesting for the fans? Or on the other hand, is it a privilege to watch Hamilton at his very best?
Well, it's kind of both. We are watching Lewis Hamilton. Love him or loathe him, he is absolutely on top of his game. He really is achieving things that, you know, of the Schumacher level that we never thought would be repeated in terms of wins and what he does. For Mercedes as a brand, this is not really good news. So imagine on Sunday if Renault, you know, a constructor who are doing nowhere near what Mercedes are doing, if they storm through the pack and win the race, Renault will get more column inches for doing that than Mercedes have had all year, because everyone's expecting Mercedes to do it week in, week out. I've noticed Mercedes have stopped running the big four-page ads they used to do in the paper after a win, because it's just losing the impact. So Toto Wolff, I'm sure, would like to see somebody, Ferrari, Red Bull, Honda, Renault, whoever, you know, take it to them, because it's just not doing their brand any good, and it's just making it look a bit samey, to be honest.
And the other thing, Rob, is do you feel that the drivers would like to see that? Because there's always that element of people saying, oh, Lewis is doing great, but, you know, he's got the fastest car, so obviously he's going to win. I mean, I think personally, the drivers would love to see a bit of competition and really show off their driving skills rather than just lead, you know, so far ahead of the rest of the pack. What do you feel about that?
I think some would and some wouldn't.
Yeah.
Mercedes have a mission to promote their brand and, you know, to sell more cars on a Monday morning, as they say. Lewis Hamilton only cares about one person, and that is Lewis Hamilton. So he doesn't probably give a fig about what the other drivers are doing. He has said, oh, you know, it would be nice if Ferrari were a bit more involved in the fight. But, you know, if it comes to it, Lewis, do you want to win by a country mile on Sunday, or do you want to lose the race? He would go for the win every time. He's got to keep churning in those figures. He'll reach Schumacher's 91 wins far sooner than anybody else imagined. So the drivers just care about themselves, don't really care about anybody else. It's the teams who need to make this more interesting, because it is becoming a bit dull. And a Mercedes win is just not, you know, doesn't have that interest that it maybe should have for them.
Are you expecting Hamilton to be able to do it at Canada?
Frankly, yes. It should be a Ferrari win, but well, they just keep finding ways to mess things up, don't they? With these, we've had really unusual tyre calls. They've been doing unusual team orders when they weren't necessary. Poor old Charles Leclerc was going to win in Bahrain until a washer fell off the car or something, and they lost again. So, I'd love to see somebody else other than Mercedes win, just from the fans' point of view. But Lewis Hamilton is on a different level from these other guys entirely. So, you know, he needs to be off his game a little bit for the others to have half a chance.
Rob, another thing, you know, talking about at the front of the race, there's not so much going on, certainly this season. And some of the best battles and some, you know, are towards the back of the back end of the pack, so to speak. Do you think that they need to change maybe the point system? Because once a driver knows they're not even going to claim points, they've not got a position. Is there any need for that, you know, competitive driving to continue? And also, should there be more coverage, perhaps, of the back of the race?
There should be more coverage, of the back of the field, not least because teams like Williams, who are doing abysmally, you know, they're losing sponsors and they're just getting no coverage, but they're putting in the most supreme of effort. So, you know, a Williams is, what, 2-3 seconds behind the most incredible car in the world. Now, in F1 terms, that's a lot, but Williams don't have the backing that Mercedes do. So I definitely think the lower part of the field, I think some races, you're just not seeing Williams there. You will occasionally see Toro Rosso or Williams there. McLaren are coming up. I think changing the point system isn't the answer. I think they do that. Do they not do that in IndyCar when everyone down to about 25th gets a point? It's a bit like one of those children's parties where, you know, pass the parcel, everybody wins a prize. It means nothing. They somehow
I used to really like
to
pass the parcel. It's the only one I did win a prize on.
Well, there you go. It's, you know, changing the system so that everybody gets a point or a prize. I think it just demeans it a little bit. Some of these teams,
but don't you
mentioned
think,
Renault,
but don't,
have got to pull their socks up.
Yeah, but don't you think, Rob, that would mean that at least they'd keep battling, you know, they'd have something to fight for right until the bitter end and claim those points that they so desperately need? It would, you know, it would keep that racing alive right to the bitter end of the race.
But yeah, if you're an F1 driver, there's only 20 of them on the planet. One driver that's impressed me this year, George Russell at Williams.
He's brilliant.
He's had a 16th, a 15th, a 17th, nothing. But he drives his socks off because he knows that other teams will be watching this. They know he's driving a dreadful car. He's beating his far more experienced teammate. So an F1 driver, doesn't matter what he's driving, the minute he starts to give up because his car's no good, then they'll hoof him out and they'll get somebody else. And there's plenty of drivers willing to put the effort in, I think.
Rob, just finally, we know that Canada is a circuit that's pretty tough on the brakes. Do we think we're going to see some drivers overdoing it and paying the price?
Canada's a great circuit. It's one of those ones I always, always love to watch. So, yes, towards the end of the race, when you see them piling into turn one, which is a sharp left, we've seen plenty of incidents in the past where they overcook it and you will get some incidents. So, fingers crossed, you're going to see a good race in Canada with plenty of incidents.
Wonderful stuff, Rob. Lovely to speak to you as ever. Rob Sinfield there of Grand Prix Diary. A fantastic interview, but I am absolutely not having that hatred of Pass the Parcel. I just think it's glorious. Coming up, one man who I suspect won every time at Pass the Parcel, probably opened every layer as well somehow, is Lewis Hamilton. He's way out in front at the moment in a league of his own. But coming up, who could push him close?
This is Love Sport.
You're with Johnny Burrow and Tori Campbell here on Love Sport Radio for the Motorsport Show, and we're previewing the Canadian Grand Prix. We've talked a lot, Tori, about Lewis Hamilton, that fantastic form he's in, that he could still well be the favourite for Canada. But who could push him close?
So I guess you've got the contenders. I mean, everybody's talking about Canada. Everyone's looking at Vettel with Ferrari. I think Bottas gets overlooked quite a bit, actually. Who's his, you know, his biggest rival.
Is it a hard thing to be not just someone's biggest rival, but nominally be on their team?
Isn't it a weird setup? I find it very hard to get my head around that actually your teammate is your biggest rival. And what a strange relationship that must be. And I think it's important that, you know, do teams show a favourite or do they try and let both drivers go out there and push and give them, you know, an even go at the...
Surely Mercedes are going to have a favourite, aren't they, at the moment?
Well, you know, listening to this show, I think we all have. Bottas is, I always say, isn't he the best kind of wingman? Because he is always there. He's a solid performer. He is always behind Lewis.
Do you think they get on off the track, as
it were?
I think
Bottas gets on with everyone.
Really?
He's such a nice guy. And, you know... nothing is too much for Valtteri. You know, he's so sweet and he's such a nice guy. And I think he gets flack for that because people say, well, how can you be a world champion? How can you be a top sportsman?
You're too nice.
You're too nice. Well, you know, I think actually it's part of his... He's very cool-headed, which is brilliant when it comes to Formula One. And I do think he's a fantastic teammate. I think Lewis has really lucked out with him.
We see, you were talking there about the complexity of that relationship where your teammates and rivals, and one is winning and one is coming second. We see this in cycling as well. We saw it in the Tour de France recently, where Geraint Thomas eventually did win of Team Sky, but there was this dynamic with Chris Froome, where Sky did have a favourite, and Froome was the star name, and everyone was expecting him to be the winner, him to be the star, Thomas to be the water carrier, as it were.
Yeah.
And yet, with each passing day, with Geraint Thomas still being in the lead, it got to a point where he had to stop giving these very self-effacing interviews where he said, no, 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 I'm riding for the team. It's not about me. And everyone sort of had to accept that actually there was a new sheriff in town and he needed to become the one being pushed. With Mercedes, if it ever happened that Bottas suddenly were the more likely to be at the top of that leaderboard, would their favourites, if they have one, change pretty quickly?
I think at the end of the day, the team has to go with who's bringing home the points. You know, that's it, it comes down to that. By the way, talking of cycling, we were trying to think what your sport would be, Johnny. I think you're
It's not cycling.
I think you're built for it.
It's not cycling. We could do this for quite a while.
It's those micro shorts that you're wearing that threw me.
You know what? My career actually started in TV, or tried to, and then they said, what are those shorts? Get out. It was quite a short-lived career. This has been a problem for me on a consistent basis because I keep being told that I'm built for virtually every sport, right? So I have rowing coaches coming up to me going, why have you not been in the gym since you're 8? You could be this fantastic rower because you've got long arms. You think, well, yeah, there is also the fact that I'm weak and malcoordinated. Or you have of this good station, our drive presenter on a Friday, you and Thomas going, you know what, you're actually, you know, you've got a decent build for a middle long distance, right? Nope, not that either. Maybe F1.
Yes, I was saying earlier, you have a very similar physique to George Russell, who is very tall, which you don't normally see in Formula One.
How do you do? Do you sort of fold your legs up?
I got into a car once and I had to be pulled out.
Right, always good. Is that just because it was so comfortable you didn't want to leave?
No.
Or was
there... I'm not built for a Formula One car. No way. They're incredible, actually. You know, and every car is built so specifically for that driver. I mean, the seat itself is completely moulded to their derriere.
Every sofa gets there eventually, though. Yeah. If you sit there for long enough, it'll happen.
This is so true. But anyway, we digress. Going back to those relationships, I find it fascinating. And I think something that shocked a lot of people last year was the relationship between Verstappen and Ricciardo, because they looked like they were having the most fun of their lives, you know,
when in reality, a great team.
And actually, when it came down to it, you know, everyone, they're sportsmen, that they want to be the top guy. They want to be the main man. So the minute that Ricciardo felt that he was getting nudged aside for Verstappen, who was getting so much publicity, and he jumped ship to one of the worst teams for Red Bull that he could have gone to.
It's not gone very well. How much satisfaction, how much prestige is there attached for those second members of the team? I mean, if and when Mercedes win, how much credit is Bottas going to get?
Well, I think, unfortunately, when you've got such a big character like Lewis, who gets so much of the limelight, I always feel quite bad for Bottas in a way, because... you know, you're overlooking a very, very talented sportsman who's also, you know, right up there with Lewis. Yet he does get overlooked. And I think that, unfortunately, is what happens. And a lot of the very successful teams do have their number one driver. It's easier for them to, I guess, work it. I'd like to think that they leave it to about mid-season and see which one is looking like it's going to win. But, you know, they want to win the Constructors' Championship. That is what their main aim is. The drivers want to win for themselves. So it's a very weird, complex...
And with that, with everyone having their own agenda, how much loyalty do we see in terms of drivers to constructors? You obviously mentioned one very famous moment of a driver jumping ship just a moment ago. But if, say... Ferrari's car overtook Mercedes in various aspects, which it's not sounding like it will for quite some time. Would, for example, Hamilton be tempted to jump ship?
There were rumours a little while back, actually, about Lewis going over to Ferrari. He's very comfortable at Mercedes. and...
Well, they've made the seat for him, you know.
Exactly. So. They've moulded it perfectly. and so it would be shocking, but you see it all the time. You see drivers go through the young driver programs for certain teams and then jump ship to a better team. And likewise, would that team be loyal to them if they weren't performing?
It does go both ways.
Yeah.
You mentioned the young stars coming through there. One name that you mentioned a moment ago is George Russell, mostly because he's tall. How does he rank in terms of prospects?
Well, you know, we were talking about the second driver at Mercedes. We were talking about Bottas. I think if anyone's going to come in, I think Mercedes are prepping George Russell, you know, to eventually drive for them. Funny enough, I had a really good chat with George last year. And I was saying, how did you get into, because he was a test driver for Mercedes. And he said he literally found Toto Wolff's email and sent him an email.
Really?
Yeah.
But surely there must have been something to put in the email.
Yeah,
if I
don't,
just email him now.
Don't you go and email him.
Hi, say, I'm really good in the polo. Give me a try.
I'm no good at cycling. What do you think my chances are? Obviously, Toto had been watching him. He was phenomenal in all the, all the lower or the lead up championship, should I say. So it wasn't like it was a complete out the blue. But Mercedes have really nurtured him and taken them under their wing. And I think a lot of teams do this. Of course they do. It's like football teams, if they see potential in a young, new, fresh talent, they're going to do their best to nurture them as much as they can and hopefully keep them loyal. But, you know, if they don't perform, they won't. But yes, so going back to George Russell, he's had a phenomenal career so far. Unfortunately, with Williams, they're not doing very well. But Williams have very close ties with Mercedes. So I think there's a reason that he went to that team.
I see. It's all about forward planning.
Yeah.
How much of a barrier is age? Because we know, of course, that Lewis very nearly won in his first ever season as a young guy. But how often do we see that?
I guess it's experience. It's also claiming that front seat in a team. There's lots of factors to it. Charles Leclerc is someone that everyone has been really raving about. He comes from absolute racing royalty. And he's stepped very quickly into one of the top teams. Would that have unnerved Vettel? I don't know. It's one of those things. But I think there's a lot to look at in terms of proving yourself, especially when you have to prove yourself against a team member who's already there.
Yeah, older, more experienced, bigger name, bigger prestige. A tough, tough thing to handle. Talking of tough challenges, we have, of course, been looking ahead to the Canadian Grand Prix. And it's that time of the show where we need to start thinking about rounding up. We've talked a lot about how this is the chance. If there's going to be a chance for Ferrari to get themselves back into this, to redress the balance, it has to happen in Canada. The power-sensitive course could favour their engine. We don't know quite what to expect from this Mercedes engine update. Do you think they can do it?
I hope that it's a really good, close race. I hope that it is for the sport. I hope that it is for the viewers. I think it needs it. And I think if they don't start turning things around now, not only will their confidence be crushed, which is a major thing, I think Mercedes are just starting to run away with it. So let's hope that we see a splash of red up there.
Yeah, hope that they do get reeled in. In terms of podium placements, in terms of winning at Canada, if a Ferrari driver were to do it, who out of Vettel and Leclerc would be more likely?
I think Vettel. He's got history with that track. He won there last year. I would go for Vettel.
And are we expecting, there is no way of legislating for this, but there is, of course, the incredibly dramatic prospect of the Wall of Champions.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who's looked a little bit reckless, a little bit overexcited, who you could see clattering into that at some point late in the race?
Oh, what's the nickname? It's got to be Max, isn't it? You know.
Overeager, pushy. Watch it. Just be careful. Use the brakes.
You know, whenever Max is just behind somebody, and it's exciting to watch, though, isn't it?
Wonderful stuff. A great
aggressive, sensational, dramatic, as you say. All words, I'm sure, that will be applied to the Canadian Grand Prix. You've heard our tips. We're hoping for a Ferrari attempt to redress the balance. But that new Mercedes engine update, particularly in the hands of the sensational Lewis Hamilton, could be quite hard to argue with. Join us next time on the Motorsport Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.